Welcome to episode 4 of the Over the Counter podcast. I'm Mark Giesecek.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.
And here we are today to talk about a kind of interesting topic that has to do with the development of our culture and, well, just really a whole lot of things. Schools, employment, stratification of society, egalitarianism, and all those things, which are all tied together in the concept of uniforms.
Yeah, uniforms is a great example of a topic that could go a million different directions because it's something that is kind of the interface between a bunch of different kind of presuppositions and kind of a symptom of different aspects of different societies and different contexts within societies, right? So, I mean, I think this one's going to be interesting.
Right. I think the basic premise that we can probably agree with rather quickly is that over the past 20, 30, 50 years in the United States, the use of uniforms has really declined.
Right.
It used to be that way more people wore uniforms a lot of the time. And so, the most obvious example is school kids, right? It used to be pretty much if you went to school, you wore a uniform that was part of that school. It was like part of your identity, right?
Was that the case in the earlier part of the last century for public schools?
I think so, but I wasn't around. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously by the time I was in school, there was no uniforms in a public school.
Right.
But there was barely a dress code.
Right. Well, there are a few places where school uniforms are making a resurgence.
Right.
Right. Both in like charter school type situations and in some Catholic schools and in some public schools where principals are saying that school uniforms promote good behavior, basically. That's usually the rationale that's being broadcast. But I think what I'm interested in when it comes to uniforms is exactly what you were talking about, is the sort of cultural expectations that go along with uniforms. So I think one of the greatest examples of this, and yet kind of bizarre example, is that of like the bellhop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In the hotel. and you have this like weird stereotypical image that shows up in some movies, cartoons, commercials or whatever, of a bellhop wearing this funny uniform with the gold buttons and the funny hats, who's carrying somebody's bags.
Right. It's a quasi-military, the bellhop.
Or even operating the lift, right? The elevator.
Yeah. I mean, they had epaulets.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks almost like a dress uniform for some kind of military.
Well, and this is what's funny, right? One of the only places, if you think about, okay, so who still wears a uniform, right? The military wears a uniform, yeah. And the police, mm-hmm. and firemen, sorta. But even those uniforms have gotten less formal than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But who else? Politicians wear suits.
And their
religious orders, right?
Habits. Or
priests
wear
black clothes. Not all of them, but most of them.
It seems like I think what's interesting is that what you said is that politicians wear suits. I think at some point during this podcast, where I want to go to is the idea that the kind of a dress code, even if it's an unspoken dress code, even if it's a dress code that's unspoken. And it's fighting the actual dress code or the expectations or something, is kind of a uniform.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, well, we need to come back to the idea of a dress code. Yeah, but I think the first thing I want to explore is why has uniform use declined? What does that even mean?
I think that before we ask that, there's a prior question we need to ask and answer. And that is, what is the role of the uniform?
Like, what does a uniform do?
Yeah, what does a uniform do? Because it's funny, because think about it. If you're in some places, it is to disclose identity, but I think it's to disclose identity in the context of something bigger. When someone has submitted their identity or has found their identity in something bigger than themselves in the common. So
we forgot something. You haven't described the coffee that we're drinking yet.
I have not. All right.
We're drinking a special. This is a pour over. So
Brew, yeah, this right? is a V60 pour over, a manually brewed coffee with a Japanese system called V60. This is a washed Guatemalan coffee from a region called Huehuetenango. And the plantation is called Finca Isnul. I think it's Isnul, Isnul. It's Isnul. This all of our coffees so far have been roasted by Novo because that's our primary roaster. We need to get some more coffees.
Okay, but we have to describe what it tastes like.
This is roasted by Novo.
I thought it tasted like chocolate-covered cherries with a little bit of wood in there. But the tasting notes describe it completely other than that.
I'll give you that. I mean, it's got a bright... It's got a little bit of kind of a red fruit thing kind of going. And there is kind of a... Almost like a dark chocolate-covered cherry.
Yeah, I could
like kind of
like,
high cacao chocolate.
Or it even tastes a little bit like rooibos tea. Like that red tea stuff.
Oh.
Not a lot. I always feel like that tastes like wood chips brewed in hot water.
Yeah. I mean, I can see the rooibos kind of comparison. Yeah,
there's,
yeah, that
yeah,
makes
there's
sense.
Like that woodiness.
Yeah, this is really affordable, actually. This is compared to some of the other coffees roasted by Novo. And and this is, yeah, but it's got a really nice, almost creamy mouthfeel. You know, I like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, anyway.
This is good, yeah.
We just wanted to tell you what coffee we're drinking.
From Huehuetenango, Guatemala, roasted by Novo Coffee. You can find this coffee at novocoffee.com.
Well, coffee baristas wear a uniform, like the green apron, right?
Green apron? What do you
mean? Black apron?
Is that a reference to the S word or something? The Bible says we shouldn't even talk about the things that are done in darkness, Mark. There is a certain uniform in the coffee world now, but it's kind of...
I just had to bring it full circle, that was all.
It's kind of the hipster dress-up thing, kind of like you were talking about the Mumford & Sons. We were talking about Mumford & Sons before
right,
we started.
Right, okay.
That's kind of the barista uniform.
We've
got to
go back and talk about why what uniforms do, right? So, weirdly, right, uniforms both communicate a person's identity and sort of assimilate that person to something other than themselves. So meaning that they have this like kind of both and effect of communicating identity and yet destroying identity or destroying individuality, if you will.
Well, I think it communicates the identity of someone,
right? As a police officer, as a fireman,
who has submitted themselves
as a military officer,
in as much as they have submitted themselves to something larger than themselves.
Right.
Now, where it gets dark. And kind of like this covering up of identity is like in a prison uniform.
Right, yeah. The
or
orange
like,
jumpsuit.
Or like Maoist China when they're
right.
all dressing this.
Yes, like, everyone wears the same shirt.
Right. There's times when it's oppressive. It's pushing you back. Now, and obviously...
Okay, the best example of that, I think, in Imperial China, this is really interesting, right, is that all of the men in Imperial China wore this ponytail thing. I don't remember what it's called. But when the emperor was like deposed and everything else, as a sign of like disobedience to the emperor, as a sign that they were releasing themselves from oppression, they cut off their ponytails.
Wow!
It was like a big protest type kind of act, but it was you know, it was the eschewing of the uniform of the empire, you know, in favor of this new form of government, you know, which in that case was communism, but.
Right. Well, and I think that's an interesting way to look at this. Is also the uniform in the sense of the style of dress when people want to associate or disassociate themselves with something aspirational, like people around the royal court of some nation in history will start affecting a style.
Right.
That looks like that. And so the king will start wearing some kind of weird shoes or something. And they'll all start wearing these weird shoes because this is a mark of where our strata is.
Right.
So that's something. A dress and uniform can mark class.
Right.
Too.
Well, you see, this is one of the weird things about culture that I just want to wrap my mind around is how these class distinctions work, whether they're intrinsically evil or whether there's actually some good aspects to them. I mean, I'm just thinking of like the lawyer or the doctor driving the BMW as like a sign of his, you know, class.
Right.
Right.
Or like blue collar. We say someone has a blue collar job, right?
Right.
That's a reference to the dark blue uniform that you send in to a service and they clean it and send it back because you get oil all over it or you get it dirty, right? And then the white collar are the guys that are wearing dress shirts.
Exactly.
Now, ironically, you're wearing a blue shirt, but it's a dress shirt. But, well, good example around here, right? You guys wear jackets and suits and ties and because you're the teachers. I, for the most part, I wear a collared shirt about three quarters of the time, but I'm wearing jeans and clogs and stuff because I'm working behind a counter. I am service labor. You know, I'm in the service industry. I'm doing manual labor. And so we look different, and it's partially practical in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I think that...
That brings up a good point, right? That oftentimes uniforms, at least in the past, were tied to professions.
Right.
Right, so you could expect a bricklayer to dress a certain way. You could expect a hotel bellhop to dress a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
A baker, right, would dress a certain way with a lot of white because he would get flour on himself.
Or chefs.
A chef would dress a certain
and
way.
They still do to a great extent. And there's a good example how uniforms have gotten supple, right? And two examples of this. Chefs and nurses.
Yeah.
Nurses used to always wear white.
Right.
Then they started kind of wearing the white scrubs all the time.
Yeah.
And then it became scrubs. And now it's kind of popular to have all these kind of crazy scrubs, you know,
yeah.
different colors, cartoon print scrubs and stuff like that. Same thing with chefs. They wore the color, usually it was the color of their culinary school. It was white most time, but some were black. And they wore this coat, and it had certain kind. They had certain kinds of hats to dictate who was the chef, who was a sous chef, who was a line cook, who was a prep cook.
Right, right, exactly.
But now, they don't. You'll have like these cartoon prints with chili peppers all over the pants and whatever, and different kinds of coats and stuff like that. But there's still a distinct dress that if you go to the store and a chef goes walking in to grab some, and you can tell he's a chef because he's got kind of that coat that's got the buttons on it or something, or he's wearing those weird pants that are kind of baggy.
Yeah, but when you go to the hospital, you can't necessarily tell who's a nurse and who's a doctor. Right?
Doctors are starting to use more scrubs
in
now.
In theory, it used to be, right, that the nurse would wear like the white hat, the white blouse, the white skirt, and the doctor would be wearing a pants and a tie and a white jacket.
Well,
right?
And the reason why that the nurse, this is interesting how these things evolve. The reason the nurses wore that is that was a previous development, because hospitals, contrary to everyone who thinks the church was oppressive and horrible throughout history, the hospital was invented by the church.
Right.
And so there were nuns.
Yeah.
There were sisters.
Right.
There were consecrated religious were the ones who were the first nurses. And so the nurse uniform kind of was modeled after a habit, hence the, like that crisp, starched white hat thing that kind of perched up there and all that. It was quasi-monastic or quasi
It looked like a religious habit.
It was a habit, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just fascinating.
And so there's a good example.
Okay, so medical people, religious people, and then people who are involved with, emergency stuff, whether it be military, fire, or police, are the ones that sort of hang on to uniforms to some extent. But it used to be like a lot of people wore uniforms, right?
Well, you used to go to the gas station, and a guy would come out and pump your gas for you and check your oil, and he would have a uniform that matched. Everybody there would have the same uniform.
Right. I mean, the closest thing I can think of is if you go to Best Buy, right, and you have all the people in royal blue polo shirts and khakis.
I mean, in business, they still have uniforms. Everybody at the fast food place is dressed the same, you know.
I guess.
Oh, yeah. If you go to Chipotle or something, they're all wearing the same.
But usually, nowadays, the uniform is the matching polo shirt, right?
Right. And it's, a lot of
times, the McDonald's uniform used to be over the top, right? Where they wore the red and white striped shirts and the tie and the funny hat.
You know, the McDonald's uniform is hilarious because it just changed so drastically, so often for a while there,
yeah,
that you just never knew what they were going to be wearing when you went to McDonald's. I think I worked at McDonald's my very first job, I think, after turning 16, my first official on the books job. And I think I was only there for a couple of months, and I think we had a uniform change during that time.
Okay, so we've sort of established what uniforms do, right? That they communicate a person's function in society or whatever, and they also sort of assimilate that person's individuality to a certain function, right? Like military.
They communicate what the person has submitted to or kind of chosen to subjugate their identity to.
Yeah, right. So it also has – there's something about that subservience or whatever that they communicate.
Right. When you see a those words sound kind of negative.
Subservience.
The Hornet on Broadway having brunch the other day. Two friends of mine were in town, and we're sitting there, and people started coming in one at a time, a couple together, and it was Denver SWAT team, and they're wearing like a green, what looks to be like a green paramilitary uniform. And they've got the thigh holster with the double straps of their guns, like right where their hand is when you're walking, instead of having to reach up and pull it. So, I mean, and I have to admit, when they were walking by, I was like, man, that is so cool. They look so cool, like in these green jumpsuits that are like all structured.
This is good fare for another podcast on military style police tactics, which I think are really, really problematic, but. We can go.
Oh, I'm with you on that. I
am not a fan of the militarization of the police force and the SWATification of everything. It's terrible. Anyway,
well, we do need to talk about that.
Okay,
yeah.
But we got to stay on uniforms. Okay, so why has uniform use declined over the past 20, 30, 50 years?
I think individualization has become way more the norm. I think that we are a society that sees our the things we've submitted ourselves to, or the things that we take part in that are larger than us, they don't touch our identity. That we don't let it get that far to us, and
we don't define ourselves in terms of our jobs
or our vocations even.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, the closer you get to the literal meaning of that word vocation, like inside the religious world, the more likely they're going to. Associate with their...
Right, but a lot of religious orders have, done away with their habits, or a lot of priests don't wear their, black clothes.
And a lot, and that's interesting. Right? This is a great
but
thing.
But that's happened in the same time period where
this is
a lot of other professions have given up their...
This is a great thing to bring up, because it's interesting that if you go and you look at all the different, especially in the female religious orders, you look at all the different orders of nuns and sisters... And you see the ones whose orders, their age is skyrocketing, the average age is skyrocketing, and the intake of new vocations is very, very small. It tracks almost exactly with how much they have abandoned the habit.
Yeah, but don't you think that's just an expression of something deeper?
Well, I think that, it expresses the more of a fidelity to something worth giving your life for if you still... But if you look at the Dominicans, the Nashville Dominicans, you look at these different orders, the Carmelites out in Alhambra, I mean, there's a waiting list for some of these orders in a time when there is no vocation. And when you look at the orders that have waiting lists, they all are carrying their traditional habits. They're still wearing their traditional habits. And so it's funny, I think that there's something in us that craves being part of something bigger than us.
Yeah.
And a uniform is a way to...
The sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Right?
And a uniform is a way to communicate that.
Yeah, it's so funny, right? Because you have all of these, pop psychology people talking about self-esteem and a sense of belonging and the need for kids to feel like they belong and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? And yet, also being very anti-uniform.
Right.
And it's so bizarre, because it's like... The uniform expresses an ideal that's very communitarian, very non-individualistic, mm-hmm. that gives people that sense of belonging for which we all crave.
The problem is that you and I both would look at that and say communitarian. Most of the modern world would look at that and say authoritarian.
Yeah. Yeah. Or soul-killing.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah. Because individuality is the presumptive kind of default sine qua non of a decent human life. I mean, having, and that's true philosophically, it's true theologically, but what we do, we are individuals. But the idea that one would submit oneself to something larger than you, that you would, heaven forbid, sacrifice, heaven forbid, that you would find your identity in something larger than yourself, is just anathema.
right,
to the modern world.
Well, and of course there is a danger in it, right? There is a danger in over-identifying with your job or your occupation or whatever, right? I mean, that's present.
But what happens when you don't do that? Here's what's funny is that there's a, you know, I came of age in the late 80s, and I can remember the you know, when Nirvana came on the scene and the whole alternative underground started becoming top 40. And it's funny, there's a line in Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana where he says, our little group has always been and always will until the end. And it's funny, it's like there's always that group of people who don't belong to a group.
Right.
And they're all different than everybody else in exactly the same way.
Right.
So they're all punk. We're punk rock. We don't give in. We're individuals. And they all have the same kind of jacket and the same spikes and the same green mohawk. It's people, when they reject something, they still crave the tribe, if not the bigger thing. They want to be part of something. And that always starts expressing itself in garb.
Right.
In some way.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, okay. So this, I mean, opens up into a much bigger question about style and whatever else. And so one of the interesting things I think about the decline of the uniform is also the decline of formal dress at work, right? Mm-hmm. Which was led by people like Bill Gates, right? Very, very powerful, wealthy people, and Steve Jobs, right? Where, although Steve Jobs, of course, adopted his own uniform of the jeans and the black turtleneck, you know, and Bill Gates has his uniform of the jeans and the sweater with the shirt and tie, right? I mean, that's basically what he wears.
And I think that I think that sums up those two companies pretty well.
Yeah, right? Exactly, right. But what's interesting...
I said with my iPhone and my Mac laptop next to
me. When the 90s began, you know, most businessmen wore suits and ties and jackets to work, right? By the end of the 90s, wasn't the case, right? You might wear a jacket with a T-shirt to work.
The dot-com thing just changed that.
And so now it seems like, I mean, very few professions still do the whole formal wear bit. I mean, maybe like investment banking and politics and a couple other kinds of...
Right, and it's like when you see them...
Formal sales, you know.
Yeah, if you see them, and if you see someone coming and they're wearing that...
Right.
Now it's all like, what are you trying to sell me?
Right. Or are you a politician?
Are you a politician? Are you an insurance agent? No, I don't want to go to an Amway meeting. I mean, it's one of those four. It's like, it's something.
Yeah. So it's just really interesting why that's happened. I also really wonder whether there's going to be a kind of rebound from that. I mean, there sort of already is with the hipster, you know, clothing thing. But that seems so... niche-y to me. It doesn't seem like that's actually the whole culture's moving that way.
No, the whole culture is still getting more and more casual.
Right.
And it's funny because I didn't really notice that this was happening everywhere, because the process that happened, when that really kind of happened, I had moved to California in 97, and in most of the, until about 2010, I was for the most part in California.
Yeah.
I was back home in Missouri for about a year and a half, but it's, and so I just thought it was, I had this big change. I just thought that I was seeing more and more people being casual all the time because I lived in a coastal town in California, but then it turns out that it was happening kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think that's ultimately a good thing in the sense that the reason, the jacket you're wearing right now used to be called a sport coat. Right?
Right, for very informal...
Right, and it's like you're dressed fairly formally today. Yeah. You're not wearing a suit, but you're the next step down from suit. You have a jacket that goes with your pants, but it doesn't match your pants.
I'll describe Andrew to you in a moment.
No, but I mean, he's wearing a sport coat and slacks and a tie and an Oxford button-down. So it's like but the button-down collars, too.
Yeah.
That was a sport thing.
Right.
Right. So you watch Downton Abbey.
Yeah. This is much less formal.
Right. This is what you would go ride the horses in and chase the foxes around or something.
Right.
Because this was informal. And it's great. I love this kind of stuff. You see these old pictures. I saw a picture the other day of a space that was reclaimed and redone, and it had been a butcher shop.
Okay, wait, hang on. I wanted to get into the Downton Abbey thing for a second.
Okay, no, hold on a second. That's where I'm going with this. Okay, so this is It was a butcher shop that had been reclaimed and turned into like this cool restaurant, and they had went and found a lot of the equipment that was in there and the old meat hooks and all this stuff. And on the walls were black and white photos of the men who worked there when it was a by-hand butcher shop back in 1903 or whatever. And you see these guys dressed in a wool suit with a three-piece suit with a six button vest and a tie and everything with a big old apron over them, and they're just like covered in blood.
Yeah.
They're standing around cutting meat, but you're a man's clothes that you wore to work, even if you were a meat cutter, was a three piece suit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just amazing to me. Okay, go back to Downton Abbey. What were you I was just going to say,
we talked a little bit about how uniforms can indicate a kind of stratification.
Yeah.
Right, and Downton Abbey is a great example of that, where you have like a very stratified society. Everybody has a very defined role. Their clothes fit that role very clearly.
Right.
And you know, you're when you walk into one of those, you know, country manors or whatever, you know exactly who everybody is and what their role is in the house.
Right.
And
you know what's going on too. It's funny. There's a moment in one of the Downton Abbey episodes when someone had come into town and they didn't have black tie with them, so they went with white tie for dinner. And they're wearing what we would still consider a tuxedo, but they had to wear the lesser. That was one step down from the formal attire that normally you would wear to a party like this, but they wanted to make this one person feel comfortable and they hadn't brought black tie. And so then the old lady that doesn't want anything to change, that lady, the one that looks like a chicken, and she says, she looks over at her son and she says, "Sir, can you bring me a drink? Oh, I thought you were one of the help." She was teasing him. It's like,
yeah.
What is this, a picnic or something? Because they were wearing white ties.
Well, see, that's the mysterious, beautiful, confusing thing about uniforms is that they give you this set of expectations. Okay, but those expectations aren't necessarily always good.
Right.
Right? Or values that we want to promote or whatever. I don't know. It's a really interesting tension between what you might want to call a kind of noble egalitarianism versus a stratification of society in which everybody has a very defined and limited role and there's no movement between those.
Right. But I think that there's a, especially when you see like with military, you have, and like police and stuff, you see this real clear like bars and stripes and pins, and so you know
exactly
who's in charge and who's under whose authority. And you see these are symbols of realities that are happening that are even tactical realities.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. I think it was worth exploring. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think we might be able to revisit things like dress and uniforms at some point in the future. But for today, the Over the Counter podcast is coming to its conclusion, and we thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time in episode 5. Our episode 4 on uniforms is now concluded, and we are now signing off. This is Mark Eastcheck and
Andrew Whaley.
I'll see you next time.